All right, we're starting here on the bottom of Hey Amud Bet. By the two dots, the Gemara is now quoting from the Mishnah, V'yumeit choletzet, that if her husband passes away, then if they did not have children, the brother, who would otherwise be in line to perform Yibum, he only performs chalitza, not Yibum. Amai, tijabim nami yivume. What's the reason that you don't have Yibum over here? So now we're going to have three attempts by Rav Yosef to explain it, and then a challenge from Abaye. There are three different lashonot about how this framed out. I'm Rav Yosef Amakra, v'yatza mi beito, v'alcha v'ayta l'ish acher. It says that she will leave his house, go out, and go to another man. L'ish acher, v'lo li'abam. So that it goes out to someone else, meaning a third party, and not to the yavam. So now the pasuk that they're quoting is not from the parsha of Sotah, but rather from the parsha of Gerushin. And it says over here that if he divorces her because matzah bat rvat davar, then vayatza mi beito v'alcha v'ayita l'ishacher, that if he finds her in her rvat davar, which there is some question to hear about the rvat davar, that's what's precipitating the problem here, then however she leaves his house, whether that's through death or that's whether through gerushin, she can marry a third party. She may not marry the yavam. If that's the case, then the pasuk's directing you to say no yibum, but that also means no chalitza. Why does our Mishnah require chalitza and not yibum? Amalei ilu ita labao milu bayiget. So Rabbi Yosef responds to him and says, if the Baal was around and he wanted to rid himself of this woman, even though there are suspicions or matzah b'arivat davar, he still has to give her a get. The woman doesn't get released from the marriage just because she did something wrong or because there was some extramarital affair. She still requires a get. Hashanami tibay chalitza. And so too in the case of the Abam, even though there's no permission to do Yibum, he still has to be released. And that release is done through chalitza. Tosafot over here discusses, there are two Tosafot here that discuss the issue of acher. The Torah uses the word acher in different places, and sometimes it seems that it means acher includes the yavam, sometimes it excludes the yavam. It's not clear where the yavam falls here. So Tosafot discusses, it says, by l'inyan l'shon t'nai beitin, shavya ke'acher. That when we're talking about the Tnai Beitin in the Ketubah, or basically the Lashon Chachamim, makes the Yavam into an Acher. He's considered to be a third party. Aval ba'acher dekra, ein ach bichlal. But when the Torah uses the word Acher, then it's not including the brother. So as far as the Torah is concerned, Acher means third parties outside of the brothers. It's the Lashon Chachamim, Acher means anybody besides the husband. That's how Tosafot tries to reconcile this seeming discrepancy as to how we look at the word acher, although he then points out that there are other cases or other instances where the word acher is used and it's not clear what it includes or what it excludes. Obviously, it's contextual and based on the drashot. Acher in general is a negative term. When we use acher instead of rishon or sheni, that already indicates that the Torah has some sort of negative view of what's happening, and we're going to see that in the next proposition that Rabbi Yosef makes as to the reason why there is no Yibum over here. And we know that also from the Gemara when they refer to Acher, Elisha ben Abuya, that he also referred to him as Acher once he went off the Derech. So we know that the word, the terminology is generally negative in nature. And so over here also, when it's talking about the Acher, that means someone outside of here, someone that is not related to this woman or to the situation at hand. Then Tosafot also points out, the pasuk that we're talking about over there is Besota Vadaya Yedeidim. There we're talking about someone who was found to be guilty, a sota, who through Eidim we know had a problem or there was an issue. And therefore, how can over here you can apply a principle or a pasuk that's relating to someone where we have evidence of an extramarital affair to a case of sota, which is a case of safek? So Tosafot says, basically, Inu Inyan. Because Sotah herself, we don't really need to learn out of this pasuk, because Sotah is called Tumah. And the association between Sotah and Tumah tells us that she's deemed to be like one of the arayot, or she has a din of tumah, which means that she goes out without anything. Tosafot believes in the Gemara in Yevamot that a sota vadeit, there is no yibum and no chalitza. I mean that the fact that she's deemed to be tumah and arayot, which means that just like in cases of arayot, if a woman falls to a yavam, she's dismissed without any yibum or chalitza, so too that's true by a sota vadeit. And so then over here, it must be that the pasuk is addressing the case of sota b'safek or sota through stira, because otherwise we don't need this information to teach us about a yavam. And that's how Tosfos gets to it. There are others who believe that that's not the case, that sota vadeit needs chalitza as well. And therefore the limud would be the same. Whether she's a sota vadeit or a sota b'safek, you need chalitza in order to release her. All right, v'damre. Some say that this was the expression of Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, Rachman amar v'yatza mi beito, v'alcha v'ita l'ish acher, d'lo listere l'beite. Why is she going out? Why is he throwing her out of the house? So that it doesn't take down his house. As we saw before, that znut v'beita is like a worm inside of a shumshima. So that it's dangerous. It rots from the inside, the household. And so this husband, ki matza bar vatavar, wants to rid himself of this woman. Vat amart tityabeim nami yivume. And you want her now to form yibum? I mean, why would you want this individual now have to deal with this woman if the husband himself is trying to rid himself of this problem? Now you're going to tell the brother, you know what, you have to take her in? That's not a fair request. Samarle abaye, elamiat lacher lo tinase, delo tistere lebeite. Then why should he be allowed to marry anyone else? And because there she'll take his house down too. So Amalei, Rav Yosef responds to him, Mika aramina la alei baal korche. The third party doesn't have any obligation to marry this woman. He chose to take in this woman into his house. He doesn't worry about this. He doesn't worry about his household being taken down. That's his free choice. But when you're talking about a yavam, then, as Rashi says over here, when you have a din of yibum, that would really say that there is almost an obligation on the individual to do it. If we say there is a mitzvah of yibum, then the mitzvah of yibum is called the mechalitza, and basically you're compelling him then to engage with this woman. And that there are rishonim who want to suggest over here, why don't we just say there's no obligation to do yibum, but if he wants to do yibum, he can. In that suggestion of Rav Yosef, that we're going to force a guy to do yibum. Some of the rishonim phrase it that the issue is that if we say there is a mitzvah of yibum, he might mistakenly think that that's his only choice and do it. On the other hand, Rashi basically says that once you take away the mitzvah of yibum, automatically the iser eshet ach comes in. I mean that it's either or. Either there's a mitzvah to do yibum, or there's an iser eshet ach. There's no in-between stage which says it's not a mitzvah, but if you want to, you can. That doesn't exist. They are the two sides of the coin. Either pick. Either there's a mitzvah to do it, or it's eshet ach. And therefore, there's none of this in-between stage where you can say, okay, if he wants to, he can, but we won't compel him to do yibum. And that would be unfair to ask this man or this individual to take in this woman when there's something wrong with this situation. This woman has a negative influence on the household, and therefore, just like her husband wants to rid himself of her, the yavam has that same right not to have to marry this woman. The Tosafot here brings from the Rach that he had flavored the expression over here, we know from the Gemarot in Yevamot, Pasuk says, Asher lo yivneh, livnot v'lo listor. And that the Pasuk says by the Yavam that he's going to build his brother's house. And if he chooses not to build his brother's house, that's the way it's expressed in the Parsha of Yibum. And so he says the purpose of Yibum is to build and not to destroy. And therefore, since this woman is a destroyer, we're not going to have Yibum take place here because it's the opposite, the antithesis of what the purpose of Yibum is. Now, v'ikadamre, a third way to express what Rav Yosef was explaining here with regards to this, Amar Rav Yosef, ha-katuv kra'o acher, she'ein ben zugo shel rishon. So the pasuk calls this individual an acher. As we mentioned before, the acher has this negative connotation to it, that she wasn't the proper shidduch for this first one. The Torah looks negatively on the second husband who takes this woman into his house. The first man divorces her because her behavior is unbecoming. She doesn't act appropriately. And then this other party goes in and marries her. And the Torah looks very negatively on this second person because the first guy got rid of this bad apple. And meantime, he takes her in. The next guy takes her in. That's very negative. So now here, where the Torah looks negatively on the third party that marries her, you're going to insist on the Avam marrying her or taking her in? It doesn't make any sense. So Amar Lei Abaye, Lemeata Niseit La'Acher Umeit Velo Banim Lo Titiabim. If the Torah views this woman so negatively, then the second husband who picked her up after the first husband got rid of her, then his brother also should be exempt from Yibum. Why are we compelling his brother to take this woman in? The first brother we're saying is exempt because the first husband wanted to rid himself of this evil. And so then we're not going to force the brother to take in this bad apple into his house. Then the second husband who comes along and marries her, the Torah looks negatively upon him and says that he's making a mistake. Then why should we compel his brother to have to pick up this bad apple? The Gemara says, "Daktuv koro acher gabei dahai mia b'shem tov havakaimo." It all depends on the relationship or the relative relationship you have with this woman. With regards to the second husband, he's picking up the woman after the divorce of the first husband. For him, or vis-a-vis this woman, he was picking up this risha'ah, this acher, this bad apple. As far as the yavam is concerned, the brother of the second husband is concerned, under the marriage of the second husband, she acted appropriately, she acted fine. So for him, the relationship that he has with this woman has always been under a clean slate. And he doesn't have any of this baggage that came from beforehand. So it all depends on the station beforehand. The second husband is picking it up after a problem with the first husband that we view negatively. And we wouldn't require Yibum in that case, and the Torah calls this second husband an Acher. But once she's already married to the second husband and acts appropriately and does whatever she's supposed to do with the second husband, as far as his brother is concerned, this was a clean marriage and there should be no problems here. Rashi says, "Ve'im karui acher la nosa mitoch amanut o gerushin amisha kilkala tachtav." That the only time we call somebody an acher is if she's widowed or divorced after there was some sort of inappropriate behavior or extramarital affair. That's where the Torah views negatively. But once she's been, like, money laundering, after she's been already brought into a clean situation where the new slate is written, where everything's fine, then the brother or the Avam over there does not have that restriction or does not have that issue. Tosfos points out that this question that we ask in this third case, you could have asked it in the second case as well. It just waits to ask the same question, but it's really the similar type of question you could ask in the last case, which is that if we view negatively the woman's position as being a soter, then why doesn't the second husband's brother also get an exemption? You could have asked that in the previous case as well. Now, Rabbi Amar, Rabbi says, no, it's this. This is the way to understand it. Kal v'chomer. It's really a kal v'chomer. Im nesra b'mutar la, basur la lo kol shekein. The kal v'chomer is that her husband, who she is muterit to, once she enters into this world of sota, she becomes asur to him. The woman is never cleared of the problem of the kinoy and stira unless she drinks the mesuta. If she doesn't drink the mesuta, then she remains asura to her husband. That's from the word v'nitme'ah. She may not return to her husband. She is asura to her husband. So then, basura lo kol shekein, where we have the yavam, who, while the husband is alive, is completely asur to him, then that isur should persist afterwards. So you have a case where a husband who is mutar turns into Isur because of the din of Sota, then the Avam, who has no permission to marry this woman, then certainly he should be Asur to engage with this woman. There's no reason to believe that he should have any more rights than the husband beforehand. Because we know that the Yavam comes from the Nisuin, or really the Kiddushin, of the first brother. The first brother married the woman. The Yavam really picks up that Nisuin or Kiddushin. So if the original husband is asur, why would the brother then be obligated to pick up this woman when the husband himself could not engage with this woman? Amalei Abaye, Elameata. If that's the case, Kohen Gadol Shekidesh et Almana, Umeit, Ve'esh lo ach Kohen Hejot, lo titiyavim. So Abaye says, well, if I extend your logic, Rava, then in a case where a Kohen Gadol marries an Almana, and then passes away without having any children, but as a brother is a Kohen Hejot, an almana is only a problem for a Kohen Gadol. It's not a problem for a Kohen Hejot. So here, the Kohen Gadol passes away. Then this woman should not have to perform Yibum with the brother who is a Kohen Hejot. Because as far as her husband is concerned, she was asura. Then why should she be muteret? Right, kavachomer. Why should she be muteret to the yavam? If nesra b'mutarla, if she's restricted to her husband, basur la lo kol shekein, then certainly the brother. Mar says this question makes no sense. First of all, nesra ha sira v'kaima. First of all, you're telling me that she became asur to her original husband. She was never muteret. She was asura from the moment he married her. This widow. Kohen Gadol is not allowed to marry this almanah. It has nothing to do with, oh, in the middle, all of a sudden, now something changed. It was always asur. Mutar la? Asur la. What does that mean that the original husband, it was mutar? She was never mutar to him. She was asur all along. So he says, the kal v'chomer that you're trying to invoke over here has no meaning in this context because the almanah was asura all along. It wasn't a new case where in the middle or something happened that changed the status of the woman in the interim. And that's the case that we're talking about. We're talking about a sukkah where something changed in the middle of the marriage. Ella, eshet kohen shenensa umet. It's a case where the kohen is married to a woman, and unfortunately, chas v'shalom, she was raped. So now she becomes a surah to her husband, but her husband passes away. And now she's left, and the yavam happens to be v'yesh lo ach chalal. He has a brother who is a chalal. Obviously, they don't share the same mother, because otherwise they both be chalalim. But it's a case where the father married a second woman. That woman that he married was a surah to the kohen. She was a grusha. She was a zonah. And then he has a brother, a half-brother, where they share a common father. But this half-brother is a chalal. Now a kohen chalal loses all forms of kedusha, and he can marry any woman that he wants. He doesn't have any of that status of a kohen. So now, in the case here, the husband is a sur to return to his wife, because she now has a status of quote-unquote a zonah, because she was raped while she was a married woman. So the kohen himself can't stay married to this woman. On the other hand, the yavam is totally permitted to marry this woman because he doesn't have the status of a kohen. He's a kohen halal, his half-brother. So now, if we invoke your principle, Rava, it'll turn out that it won't be that way. So lo tityabem, im nesra b'mutarla basurla lo kol shekein, her husband who she was muteret to, now she's restricted in, the Yavam, alachad kama v'kama, it should be that way. Where it says, ones b'Yisrael mishra shari, v'gabi dehai, laki yisura. You can't, the way that you're framing it doesn't work here. Because as far as ones is concerned, there is no restriction when it comes to an Yisrael. This is solely a problem for the Kohen. It's not a generic or general problem with this woman. It only has to do with this woman, vis-a-vis, right, the situation she's in where there's a Kohen that she's married to. But as far as any Halal or any Yisrael, she has no status like that. That means that her generic or general status is not of a woman who is a Surah. Just happens to be in the context of being married to a Kohen, she's a Surah. So that's why you can't then use the Kal v'chomer to restrict her on the brother who is a Halal. Tosafot over here asks, why doesn't the Gemara bring up the case of a Ptzua Daka? You have the same thing there, where you have a husband who, when she married, she was muteret, and then he turns into a ptzua daka during their marriage. She's now a surah to remain with her husband, but if her husband passes away and there's a yavam who is healthy and has no issues at all, then she can perform yibum. Why don't we invoke the kal v'chomer of Rova then, which says that if she is a surah to her husband, then certainly she should be a surah to the yavam. It should be the same question. So Tosafot asks the question, why does the Gemara not raise that issue? Instead of bringing up this case of Kohen and Nensa, it could have brought up the case of Ptzua Daka. So here Tosafot does not give an answer. Tosafot and Yevamot speaks about it. Tosafot Shantz as well over here mentions it. But there's a difference in the cases, because who is generating the Isur? Or where is the person who's Asur? We're looking for a case where the woman herself is Asura, or something that changes the status of the woman herself. In the case of Ptzua Daka, it's not the woman that is the problem, it's the man that is the problem. She has a restriction to be together with such a man. But the Isur is not the Isur on the woman. And that's why the Gemara does not bring that as the case over here, because that's a different issue. The issue there is the husband, not the wife. In all the cases, in the one that we're trying to compare to our Mishnah, where it's a Sota, is a question where the woman has become restricted, and that's the issue by the woman. Right, now the next Mishnah says, Ve'ilu asurot melechol b'truma. These women are restricted from eating truma. This is obviously picking up on our Mishnah, where the sotah one of the things that happens to the sultan. So she drinks is not only she has surah to her husband, she's a surah lechol bitruma. So merit to me ani lecha if she says that I had an extramarital affair. The woman herself says to her husband that I was engaged with another man, and therefore I am restricted to you. Then she loses out her truma. Vishabau edim she tmeya. Or we have edim that come and say that she is tmeya. Some of the Rishonim discuss what has changed once she tells us tmeya ani lecha. Because before that point in time, she was also asura. Because once she has kinui and stira, she is asura. So one answer to that question might be that when she's still asura because of kinui and stira, it's not a permanent state. She can, through the mei sota, release herself from this problem. But once she declares herself tmeya ani lecha, then that is a permanent status. And that actually might be the common denominator to all the women mentioned in this Mishnah, is that they have now changed their status permanently, where they no longer will be able to eat truma because of what transpired. So they all look for nafkaminot between these cases. Some discuss the fact that maybe if she's a bat kohen, that might change the situation, because not only is she eating truma from her husband, she's truma from her father's house, then this might implicate her in this case to block her from going back to eating from her father's house. The other nafkamina, they look between them. Velomeret, any shota. So another case is where a woman who had kinui bistura refuses to drink the mei sota. She remains a sura to eat bitruma. Vishabala, in rozelo hashkota. Or her husband doesn't want to give her to drink from the mei sota. Vishabala, bala baderach. Or in the case where the husband basically negates the ability for the mei sota to work, which is that based on the psukim, we know that a ish nikame avon, that the husband also has to have a clean slate. There are different drashot about that. We spoke about that in the introduction to the Masechta. But here, the Mishnah is focusing on the drasha that the husband must be clean. That means that after she became a surah to him because of this kinui bistira, he doesn't do anything to undermine that, which is that if he has bi'ah with her on the way there, that's a surah, and then the mei sota don't work anymore. So because of that, she'll never be able to drink the mei sota. She'll remain a surah labala, and she won't be able to eat truma. Now, many of the Rishonim point out over here that this Mishnah is ke Mishnah Rishona. If you remember that the Mishnayot discussed the fact that originally, when a woman used to say tmei ani lecha, we used to believe her. The Mishnah then said by Mishnah Achrona, they changed that. Because women were using that as a way to get out of their marriage. They wanted to get out of a marriage. They couldn't compel a get. What did they say? Tmei ani lecha. And then she got out of the marriage. So why was she doing that? She fell in love. She saw somebody else she wanted to marry. And so she wants to get out of the marriage. She says, tmei ani lecha, even though it's not true, in order to force a termination of the marriage. So the Gemara said, then they stopped believing the woman. And that she would be permitted to eat truma. So here our Mishnah says, when she says, tmei ani lecha, she loses out on the truma. So how come this Mishnah is following the Mishnah Rishona and not the Mishnah Achrona? So you look in the Tosfot Chance, answers the question, he says, you have to differentiate between the cases. What's the difference between our case here and the case in the Mishnayot in the Darim that suggests that we change the din with regards to Tamei Ani Lecha? So the answer is, V'yesh Lamar, Dainu Taimo Dehocha Igra Raglayim Badavar. Over here, it's very different. When she declares herself to have had an extramarital affair, that's after Kinui and Stira. There's circumstantial evidence that something's already gone awry, and therefore, there's reason to believe her that not to discount what she's saying. Another case, Harry Kina Love in Istrav, Lekala Mechash, the Shema Inea Natana Be'acher. You're not worried about her looking at someone else. Forget about looking at someone else. She's already like engaged and done things with someone else. Right? Umshumachik Shamra Tameani Ne'amenet. That's why she's believed. Aval Hotam, by the case in the Mishnah Nidarim, Leka Raglaim Ladavar, Shomeret Tameani He Mishakeret. When she all of a sudden pops up and says Tameani, they've got to be suspicious of why all of a sudden she's coming out with this declaration. So he differentiates between these cases to say that even though our Mishnah here seems to be following the view of the Mishnah Rishona, it's not true. It's because you can differentiate between the cases where you have circumstantial evidence and we don't have circumstantial evidence. If we have circumstantial evidence, there's less likelihood to believe that she's just lying to get out of the marriage. Or we know she's not because she's already been doing things with this other individual, and therefore there's a lot of reasons to believe her in this case. And that's what Tosafot says, something similar to the Machloket of Rav Sheshet and Rabo in the Gemara in the Darim. Amar Rav Amram, Ha milta amar lan Rav Sheshet. This memra we heard from Rav Sheshet. Vanhar lan ainin mimatnitin. And he lightened our eyes through the Mishnah, meaning that he brought the Mishnah as a proof to his position. Sota sheishla idim bibinidata yam. If sota who has idim overseas, ena mayim bodkim mota. It doesn't work. The mei sota don't work if you have idim overseas. My taima. What's the reason? Damakra v'nistara v'hi nitma'a v'edein ba. That a case is where she secluded with this individual. V'hi nitma'a, and then there was an act of niyuf that was perpetrated. But edein ba. There's no witness. There's no evidence of this fact. Daleka diyoda ba. That nobody knows. Lafuke ha da'ika diyoda ba. That is to exclude the case where you have edim overseas, where when you have edim overseas, somebody knows about it. So if somebody knows about it, it doesn't work anymore. And he brought the proof or evidence from our Mishnah. Tatani shubaula edim shehit meya. Then our Mishnah says, what's the case where she doesn't eat truma? It's a case where edim came and said that she is tmeya. Da'atu edim emat. When did these edim show up? Inema mekami de tishte. If the edim show up before she drank, zonahi, then she is a zonah, or basically she is a mina'efet. Of course she doesn't eat truma. She's your classic case of a woman who had an extramarital affair and has lost out on her marriage. Forgetting about sota, even in any case like that, she would lose out on her rights to truma. Elo lebatar de shatai. The case where they came after she already drank the mei sota. So what happens after she drank the mei sota? She's cleared. And she's able to now return to your husband and eat truma. And we see from our Gemara, it seems here, v'nika ishmavon, that we say that as soon as she's cleared, she can go back to her husband. We don't make her wait. As Tosafot will say later on in the Mizrach, we don't make her make 3 years or something to see if there's any evidence that shows up to the contrary. We basically say, once the mesotah come along, they clear it right away. So yamar bishlamayin amadim bokimotah shapir. If you say the water doesn't work when there are edim, the reason the water didn't work here is because there were edim, not because she was innocent. And therefore, she may not eat truma anymore when the edim show up after she's already drunk the water. Eliyah Mart, mayim bodkim ota. If it mayim work, tigle milta lemafreya desadei shakaninu. If we believe that the water works in any case, even when there are edim, the problem is not with the water anymore, the problem is with the edim. And we should, from this, believe that the edim are mishakrim. Oh, so very good. So that does what asks you a question. Why don't we just say, the baal abaderech. And that's why the waters don't work over here. The last line of Tosfot Shans here, he says, Hiksha aram mi pontaiza le Rabbeinu Tam. So let's say they're not Ede Sheker, but rather the husband did something wrong. So Rabbeinu Tam says back to him, Lekal amecha shema baalea. You don't worry about the fact that the husband came upon her. Why? Lo mi baile Rabbonon. According to Rabbanon, for sure not. Da'amrei mosrim la shnei talmidei chachamim. That they give them a livui. They have an accompaniment. They have chaperones that go with them up to Yerushalayim to ensure that nothing goes wrong. And that we have witnesses that stay with them. Ela filo Rabbi Yehuda. Even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it says they don't do this. Leka lemechash. Da'atu b'shuftani askinan. Are we dealing with fools here? What's the husband thinking? He's taking the woman up to drink in the Migdash. Meantime, he's having biyah with her on the way, and he knows once he does that, it's not going to work. So he says, what's he taking all this effort and making all the effort to take her up to drink the mei sota when, meantime, he's negating the ability for the mei sota to work? So he says it's a very rare situation where you'll have the husband engage with this woman on the way up. And since it's a very rare circumstance, we're not going to be choshesh for that possibility. And therefore, we will say that these edim are edei sheker, which is amazing because, given the context, we're saying here generally anywhere else in the Torah, when you have edim that come along, two edim, they establish fact. We don't even question two edim. Two edim have full believability, and they are koveya, the facts, the circumstances, everything. Over here, all of a sudden we say these are edei sheker because maim is bodkimuta. The likelihood is partly because edim, whenever it comes to niyuf, or whenever it comes to biyah, edim are not always giving you perfect information, because even when they see it, they can only surmise based on the activity that this was biyah. They can't have, it's not like they're there and they can tell for sure that it happened. They can just say that they acted like a no eif and no effet. And so because of that, we can somewhat discount their edut and say that they were just surmising from the situation and maybe they're conclusion was incorrect. And that's why we poke a hole in this and then say that they're possibly Edei Sheker over here. Now, Rav Sheshet's statement is interesting. He says when you have Edim here, or there are Edim overseas, then we do not think that the Maim is Budkim. And then when the Edim return afterwards, they're able then to go up against the Maim and say that the Maim didn't work because we knew about it. Tosfot over here clarifies and says, I don't know what type of Edim are we speaking about. He says, Misfeka l'Rabbi, Idapka nakat Edim, Shnaim, Aved Echad lo, Mehemen. Rav Sheshet uses the word Edim, which is in plural. Does Rav Sheshet mean that this is only true when you're talking about two Edim? That if you have two Edim overseas, since two Edim normally are Edim that carry weight, so therefore when you have the Edim overseas and she drinks the water and they come back, since there are Edim, and when they come back, they can undermine the Meis Sota, that's why it doesn't work. And then an Eid Echad would not have that power, because Eid Echad carries no power, except in cases where he's been empowered. Over here, he was empowered before the Meis Sota, because there was Raglaim the Dabar. But now, once you've had the Meis Sota, and he drank the Meis Sota, you've already neutralized the problem of Raglaim the Dabar, because the Meis Sota didn't work. Is the Eid Echad believed afterwards now? Does he have that power? The answer would be no. Then also he should not block the Meis Sota from working. So that's Tosafot asks the question, is that the case? Or maybe we say that Eid Echad was granted the power like Shnei Edim over here. And since he's granted the power like Shnei Edim, he remains with that power of Shnei Edim. So Tosafot here has a Safek. In the end, he leans more heavily towards the side that's saying that Eid Echad would work this way. The Rambam, on the other hand, believes only to Edim. It's not to Edim, it doesn't work, it does not block the ability of the Meis Sota. So the knowledge here has to be knowledge of regular Edut, Kol HaTorah Kulah, not the knowledge of the Diuk that we make of Edim Ba, according to the Rambam. Tosafot favors saying that since, once you give an Eid, the power of to Edim, he becomes like to Edim, then he will remain with that power of to Edim, and he can then block the Meis Sota from working, and if he shows up afterwards, he can then cast dispersions of what happened until that point in time. As Rashi says over here, why is it that the Pasuk is not enough evidence for Rav Sheshet? Rav Sheshet doesn't just bring our Mishnah as evidence, he brings a Pasuk as evidence. So why is it that Rav Amram says, well, he brought us a Pasuk and he proved it from the Mishnah. What do you need a Mishnah for if you have a Pasuk that supports you? So Rashi over here says, it's the first wide line in Rashi, says, Ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Mishum dekra lav raya hu kol kach. Dar darshine lesota vadait yesh ba eid echad lefaneinu lelamech lo tishteh. The real drusha of the pasuk, or the pashtut of pasuk, is talking about a case where we have an aide who knows that something happened, and he testifies beforehand to block the Meis Sota from working. It's not in a case where the edim aren't here, and she's going to drink, and it's saying that it's blocking it. So he says that's not the pashtut of pasuk. And since that's not pashtut of pasuk, he needs the Mishnah to back him up and say that that is a proper way to interpret the pasuk. Others suggest that Rav Sheshet is an amora. And as an Amora, he doesn't have the right to darshan a Pasuk, and therefore he needs a Tanaic work to back him up to say that that's a proper way to read the Pasuk. So that's why he brings the Mishnah to back him up in these cases. So now, the Gemara is going to spend the rest of today's daf basically challenging this position that Rav Sheshet brought up and supports from our Mishnah. And so now the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Yosef, Lo'olam eimadacha mayim bodkim ota. I don't know if you're right here, because maybe the water always works. Even when you have Edim. Ah, so why didn't the water work in this case? Vaha imur zchut tolela. Let us say here, and this is based on the Gemara, the Mishnah that we're going to see on Daf Chav Bet, which is that women have certain merits that can protect them from the Mayim Amarim, or Me'arim, destroying them or killing them right away because they have a merit that blocks it from happening. Gemara says, but my kemiflegei, Beminit Navno Darabi. What are Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshet arguing about over here? They're arguing about this deterioration of Rabbi. Ditznan. We have a Mishnah further on. Rabbi Omer Zchut Tola Bemayim Hamarim. It's Zchut. Merits are able to protect the woman from dying from the Meis Sota. Ve'eno Yoledet Ve'eno Mishabechet. But that doesn't mean that she will get better or get worse. She will not have any children. She will not get healthier. Elamit navna volechet the sof she meta bota mita. But she deteriorates slowly until she dies from the same mita that would have been imposed by the Meis Sota. Nafla yerechech, then safta bitnech, That will happen in the end, but it'll take time. It will be over a duration of time that it will happen, not immediately. So that's what the schut does. The schut postpones the death for not being immediate, but stretching it out over time. So Rav Sheshet Savar, Ben Rabbi, Ben Rabbanan, Havya Mitnavno. The Rabbanan over there argue with Rabbi and say when you have a schut, it protects the woman completely. Question is, how far do they argue on Rabbi? What Rav Sheshet suggests is that Ben Rabbi, Ben Rabbanan, the woman deteriorates. The only difference between them is that Rabbi believes she dies in the end, the same death as the Mesota. The Chamim say that she does not die or doesn't die the same death as the Mesota. So the argument is in the final stage. But in the interim stage, they agree that this woman has a deteriorating health condition. And that means that both according to Rabbi and the Rabbanan, it's obvious if a Sechut protected her, it's still obvious that this woman was not innocent because her health will continue to deteriorate. So that can't be the issue here. When the Edim show up, and we say, oh, they must be Edei Sheker because the Mayim didn't work. Well, we'll know that the Mayim didn't work. It didn't work immediately. And she's also not deteriorating. So we know that it wasn't because of a Zchut that the Mayim didn't work. Otherwise, we would see her health deteriorate. The fact that she's in perfect health shows you that there was no Zchut and she was an innocent woman. And therefore, we will question these Edim. Rav Yosef Savar L'Rabbi, Havi Mitnavna, Rabbanan Lo Havi Mitnavna. Rav Yosef, on the other hand, believes that the Chachamim completely argue with Rabbi. And not only do they disagree that she will die the death of the Mesota in the end, they also say she does not deteriorate. When we say she has a schut, it protects her completely. And therefore you won't know. When she takes the mayim and she drinks and she's perfectly healthy afterwards, you don't know why she's healthy afterwards. She's either healthy because she has a schut, she's healthy because she was innocent. It's impossible for you to differentiate between the two. And therefore Rabbi Yosef asks the question, how do you know the Edim are lying? Maybe the Edim are telling the truth, but she has a schut that is protecting her over here. And that's the difference in their opinion. Rav Sheshet says that's never an issue because even according to the Rabbanan, she will deteriorate her health and it'll be obvious that the Mesota are working. Whereas Rav Yosef believes that the Mesota don't work at all when she has a schut. And therefore you have a real question here. Do you know that she's really innocent and the Edim are lying? Or maybe she has a schut and the Edim are telling the truth. Meiti Rav Shimi Ba'ashi. So Rav Shimon Rashi now challenges Rav Sheshet from this part. Rabbi Shimon Omer, it's the latter half of that Mishnah. Ein schut tole b'mayim amarim. Rabbi Shimon basically brings up a very problematic issue with this idea that schut protects the woman. He says that schut does not work b'mayim amarim. Because if imata omer schut tola b'mayim amarim, because if you think that a schut has the ability to protect the woman in the case where she drinks the mesuta, then no woman is going to be afraid to drink the Mesota, as well as it's going to cast aspersions on the ability of the Mesota to do anything. So now you're going to run into a problem from both sides, which is number one, the women who are really innocent and drank the Mesota and they came out clean. What are people going to say? They weren't innocent. They just had a schut. And the other way around, the women who are tmeot are not going to be afraid to drink the mesota because they say, look, that woman clearly had niuf. She drank the water and she's walking around just fine. Why should I not drink the waters? These waters don't do anything. So basically what Rav Shimon says, if you say schut tolela, then you've defeated the whole purpose of the mesota because they're no longer efficacious at being mivarer whether the woman is really innocent or guilty. What Rav Shimon Ba'ashi says is, Rav Shimon's worry should not be just by the case of Zchut. It should be a worry about any case where she drinks the Mesota, because there's a possibility there are Edim Be'er Le'yam, the Edim overseas, and the reason the Mayim doesn't work is because there are Edim overseas. And so also again, you're going to cast aspersions on the Mayim, as well as the women who drank it and were innocent. This is in the sheet of Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbi Shimon, it's very interesting. He says that since, according to Rabbi Shimon, schut doesn't protect the woman, so too, edim overseas will not protect the woman. It's an interesting because the two are not necessarily correlated or connected. The fact that a schut protects the woman is because of the woman's own merits that it would protect her. On the other hand, the edim, the reason that it protects her, quote unquote, it's not protecting her from the mayim. It's just that we don't need the mayim in this case. The mayim doesn't work because it wasn't necessary. And therefore it doesn't work. Yet the Gemara here connects and says, if Rabbi Shimon believes that there is no schut tolela, Because otherwise it would ruin the Meisota or bring rumors about the women that were Torot. We would say the same thing with regards to Edim. Edim will not prevent the Meisota from working because otherwise, again, you defeated the purpose of the Meisota. So Meitiv, Rav, or we have the other Gersas, Meitiv Rava, Ve'elu Shemin Chotehen Nisrafot. These are individuals who their Menachot are Nisrafot. Menachot Nisrafot means that the Mincha that was brought in the Mikdash, something happened to make it Pasul before it ended up on the Mizbeach. So what do? You don't throw it out because it's Kadosh. So what do you do is you burn it by Beit HaDeshen. You put it onto the Beit HaDeshen and burn it, which is a way to dispose of it in a kavadik manner. So that's what it means that it's Nisrafet. Ha'omeret Tmeyani, Vishabawla Edim Shehi Tmeyah. The two instances, a case where the Sotah brings along with her what's called a Minchat Avon, Maskeret Avon, which is a Minchat Se'orim that she brings to the Mikdash as part of her process as a Sotah. Now, if she says, Tmeya Ani, or Edim come in the interim and say that she was Tmeya, then the Mincha is no longer necessary, and therefore the Mincha now goes to Beit HaNisrefet. So Mar says, Atu Edim Eimat. When did Edim show up? Ilema Mikame did Tikdosh. If it's a case before she made it Kadosh, or before they made the Mincha Kadosh, Tipuk the Chulin. You can redeem it, and then take it out to Chulin. Elo Levatar the Kadosh. Must be a case where it's after she was already Makdish the Mincha. Iyamar Pishlama Mayim Bodkim Ota. If you say that the Mayim works, Alma Bat Mikdosh Mikravi. Then you can argue that when she made it Kadosh the Mincha, there was a necessity, and there was a reason to do it, because even though there were Edim, to the fact, since they're not here, that makes it that the mayim would work. And this procedure was done properly in the attempt to bring her to drink Meisotah to figure out what was going on. V'chi kadosh mi'ikara shapir kadosh. And therefore, originally, when she was makdish the mincha, it was done in proper manner, in proper form. U'mishum achi minchata nisrefet. And therefore, her mincha goes to be nisrefet because it's kadosh. Ela I amart ein amayim bodkim ota. If you say the mayim doesn't work when they're edim overseas, tigle milto the mafreya, then retroactively becomes clear, techi kadosh miikara betaot kadosh, that when they were makdish this mincha originally, it was done mistakenly, because even if she drank the waters, it wouldn't work now because they're edim overseas. So if it's not going to work anyway, there's no reason that she would be makdish this, and it's what's called hekdesh taot. And hekdesh taot v'tipok the chulin. It should go out to chulin. Because if there's hekdesh taot, we know from Beit Hillel, when it comes to hekdesh taot, that is not hekdesh at all. And therefore, if it's a mistaken hekdesh, the mincha should be chulin. You should be able to take it out without any issues here. Why do you have to burn it? To understand it's a little bit, you have to know that when it comes to a mincha, the original part of the mincha is that you're makdish bepeh. That means that orally or verbally, you declare this mincha or this item to be a mincha. That is what we call kudushat mamon. That means that monetarily, you've dedicated or placed this item to be used for something that is kadosh. It only gains what's called kedushat aguf, where the item inherently becomes kadosh once it's placed into a kli sharet. Once it's placed into a kli sharet, then it gains what's called kedushat aguf. As long as it's just kedushat peh, kedushat mamon, then it's just monetary dedication, and you can redeem it. You can exchange that kedusha from the mincha into money, and you can take it out to chulin. Once it attains kedushat aguf, inherent kedusha, you can't redeem it anymore. And therefore, if something is found to be pasul with the mincha, it's nisrefet. So what we're suggesting over here, it has to be a case where the mincha attained kedushat aguf. That's only when it was placed into the kli sharet. And what Rav or Rava is questioning Rav Sheshet about is, here we have Edim that show up and say that she was tmeyah after they put it into the kli sharet, after they had kedushat aguf. So what do we do with this mincha? Do we say that it was a complete mistake that we brought it, and it's chulin the gamrei? Or do we say, no, that when she was bringing it, it was the intent to drink the meisotah, and it would have been efficacious, just we got information in the middle that changes that. So now, what's the difference? The difference is whether the meisotah work or not. If you believe that the meisotah work, then when you were makdish the mincha, there was a reason to be makdish the mincha, because it would have worked, even if the edim are out there, because they didn't show up. And that's why it's kadosh, and you have to burn it. But if you say that if there are edim there, it wouldn't work at all, then why is the original hekdesh a good hekdesh? It was done by mistake entirely. It wouldn't have worked anyway. And the whole thing is premised on a mistake, and it should be chulin. What do you prove from here? That even when there are edim out there, the meisotah work, and that's against Rav Sheshet's position. So now the Gemara says, no, you got that wrong. I'm Rav Yehuda. Midiskarta kagon shezinta bazara. Now the Edim are not coming to tell us about znot that happened prior to her coming into the Mikdash and being Magdish the Mincha. These Edim are coming to tell us about znot that happened after she arrived in the Azara, after she brought her Mincha, and then she has another affair there on the side. Techi Kadosh, Mikara Shapir Kadosh. Because then when she was Mikadesh, the Mincha, it was a fine Kedusha, because there was nothing there. We don't have any Edim saying that there was otherwise. When the Edim show up, they're talking about something that happened post the Hekdesh of the Mincha. So Matki Flora Mishar, Shevelo Pirche Kunam Elavinota. So where it says, wait a minute, in later on in the Masech, the Mishnah are going to describe the fact that when she's brought up to the Mikdash, she's accompanied or escorted by all of these young Kohanim. So they're all around her. What do you mean there's a Znot here? There are people around her all the time. So where it says, either she's in Tami Pirchei Kunatzman, one of those that was accompanying her was the problem, or Ravashi Amar Kagon Shenitzu Chal Nikaveh, that she had to go to the bathroom. And so she shakes off the accompaniment, because da'atu pirchei kunah b'kipa talila, at least pirchei kunah tied to her hair covering. And that day, in their day, the hair covering, the kippah that went on her head, they used to tie to the kippah, either jewelry that hung down, or other coverings of the hair were tied onto the kippah. So here it's like a mashal. Are the pirchei kunah attached to her kippah where they can't separate from her? She has to go to relieve herself in the bathroom. She's gonna be away from them, and she could perpetrate such a crime. So it's not impossible that she had znut here, and therefore that's the case that will solve our problem and not be a question of Rav Sheshet. Tosfot here raises the issue as to why it's nisrefet, even if you believe that the mesuta would work if it was kadosh, because her husband is involved in the process, and her husband is the one who's paying for this mincha, and we find by nidarim that in the case where the husband nullifies his mate for the nether of his wife, then if she had segregated out korbanot in the case of a nazira, they go out the chulin. And why over here is that not the same situation where it would go out the chulin? And so Tosfot doesn't completely understand why it has to be nisrefet here, even if you believe that the mesuta work, because the structure is similar to structures we saw in nidarim and in nazir, where when the husband pulls the plug on the wife, and there were items that were kadosh, fully kadosh, with the expectation to use the kedusha, but when that's terminated, that kedusha dissipates and it goes to the chulin, and it should be the same here, where if hekdesh ta'ut, like we pass in like Beit Hillel, it should go out to the chulin. Tosfot also asks from the case of an asham taloi. The case of an asham taloi, which is brought in an aveira b'safek, there we say that afterwards, if he finds out for sure that he did the aveira, or he didn't do the aveira, the asham taloi is still mukdash, and he brings the korban of the Asham Taloi. So why over there do we not say the same thing as here, which is once you get the information that's not necessary, let Mafreya retroactively, it should nullify or deem the Asham Taloi to be unnecessary and should be go out to Chulin, like you're suggesting here by the case of the Mincha. So what you have to say is that there's a difference between the Mincha over here and the case by Asham Taloi. The reason a person brings an Asham Taloi is because he's worried. He's worried about the punishment, the Yisurim that might come, or he's worried about the Chet. And from that, those feelings of guilt and worry, he's Makdish the Asham Taloi with that purpose, which is that it's all premised on this Safek that they Makdish the Asham Taloi, and the whole procedure of Asham Taloi is born out of a case of Safek. And since that's the premise of it, that's why we say that even after the fact that we get information that clarifies the situation, he would still bring the Asham Taloi. That's not the case here. The case here is that the Mincha is only brought because we want it to work with the Mesota, and we wanted to be mevarer, clarify information that we don't have. If that information is clarified in another means or another manner, then there's no reason you would have brought this mincha. This mincha is not about kapara. This mincha is procedural in nature, which is that what gives you the next step or allows you the next step to drink the mesota. But if we get the information that we need beforehand, then no one would have thought that the mincha has to be brought over here. And that might be the answer to the question of Tosfot in the previous case as well, which is that why is this different than a husband who pulls the plug on his wife's nizirut, that the animals go out to chulin? Because over there, the korbanot are premised on the fact that she completes the nizirut, she does what she has to do, and then the korbanot are the termination of the completion of the nizirut. Over here, the mincha is not part of a process of kapara, or a completion of any cycle, it's simply procedural. And therefore, at the time that you were makdishit, it was done properly, it was necessary for that procedure, and therefore it's deemed to be kadosh, without any backing out of it, or rather than saying that the mafreya it's kulin, because in the end you realize you don't need it. The answer is you do need it, because that was the procedure. Okay, the procedure got stopped along the way, because we got information that made it unnecessary, but that doesn't change the fact that when the Qurban Mincha was brought, or it was Mukdash, it was done because of the procedural nature of it, not for the Kapara aspect or completion aspect of it that is true by the Korbanot of the Nizira. In addition, Tosfos notes that why can't we say that it's the equivalent of Hatarat Nidarim over here? Because for Beit Hillel, every Hakdasha is the equivalent of a Neder. And you just do Hatarat Nidarim because they didn't need it, or the premise of this was mistaken. And therefore, it should not be problematic. Tosfot over here leaves it as a tzarachiyun, but Tosfot in other places, like in Kretot, mentions that you're not allowed to do Sheila and Hekdesh after you already have shechted the behema. At that point, it's already too late. And we're going to see here that the separating of the kmitzah is the equivalent of shechita, and therefore you're too far along in the process to be able to reverse it through hatarat nidarim. Rapapa amar, the olam kidamrina miikara. So no, Rapapa says, no, that's not the case, but rather, it's like we said originally, that the Edim showed up after she was already Mekadesh, the Mincha, and nevertheless, it's still Kadosh, and we don't consider it to be Hekdesh Ta'ot. Why? Tamar Tipuk Tuchulim? So you want to say to me that it should go out to Chulim because it's Hekdesh Ta'ot? Midrabanan. This whole thing here is all Midrabanan. Zera Shem Yomru Motzim Mikli Sheret Tuchol. We're afraid that people who witness this are going to see that the Mincha went into a Kli Sheret, and afterwards, we're just letting it go to Chulin without any problem. And they're going to assume now that means that even after Sunday is Kadosh B'Kli Sharet, that it can go out to Chulin, which is not true. It happens to be that this is a unique circumstance where there was a mistake. So now what he's saying is, Midoraita in Ochanami, it's Hekdesh Ta'ot, and this is not Kadosh at all, and doesn't have to be Nisrefet. It's only Nisrefet B'Drabanan to prevent this Barat Ayin, where people might think that a Kli Sharet, after it's in a Kli Sharet, it could be released to Chulin. So, Meitiv Rav Mari, Nitmeit Minchata Ad Shelo Kidsha B'Kli. If the Mincha became Tmei'ah before it went into the Kli Sharet, Rehi Kechol HaMinachot V'Tifteh, and you can redeem it, because that only has Kedushat Mamon, Kedushat HaPeh, and you can redeem it. Misha Kidsha B'Kli, after it's already been Nitkacha B'Kli Sharet, and it takes on Kedushat HaGuf, it's like any other mincha, and then it's burnt because it's no longer able to be redeemed. Once it's placed into a Kli Sharet, then it gains what's called Kedushat HaGuf. As long as it's just Kedushat Peh, Kedushat Mamon, then it's just monetary dedication and you can redeem it. You can exchange that Kedusha from the mincha into money and you can take it out to Chulin. Once it attains Kedushat HaGuf, inherent Kedusha, you can't redeem it anymore. And therefore, if something is found to be pasul with the mincha, it's nisrefet. Hidesh hakometz, v'lo yispik la'akrivo. Process of the mincha, or the creating of the mincha, is similar to that of shechting a behema. There are four avodot by the shechita, or the bringing of a korban of a behema, and there are four parallel avodot by the mincha. And just like by the behema, the shechita of the behema is mikadeshet, in order to then be brought on the Mizbeach, for the Mincha, that happens through the process of Kmitzah. Kmitzah, taking off that portion, the fistful of the Kohen, is the equivalent of Shechita. Placing it into a new Kli Sharet is the equivalent of Kabbalat HaDam by the Behema. Holacha, taking the Dam to the Mizbeach, or by the Mincha, taking the Kometz to the Mizbeach, are equivalent. And then the Zrikat Adam and Mizbeach is equivalent to the Hakravat HaKometz ala Mizbeach. And therefore, if Hidesh HaKometz v'lo yispik la'akrivo, if he takes the Kohen, takes the Kometz, which is the handful off of the Mincha, and places it into a Kli Sharet, and that Kli Sharet then takes it up to the Mizbeach, he takes it within that Kli Sharet up to the Mizbeach to be makrivit, then v'lo yispik la'akrivo, but he doesn't get on the Mizbeach, ad shemeit hu, before the husband dies, or the wife here, the wife who's suspected over here dies, it's It's like any other mincha, and then it goes to the sreifa because it's no longer relevant. It's no longer relevant to bring the mesota. It has kedusha to guf because it was placed in a kli sharet, but it's no longer relevant to put on mizbeach because you're not going to solve anything. Although there is actually some value here, because number one, the fact that if she is cleared, made innocent over here, she could marry the Boel, which she couldn't do if she doesn't drink the mesota. That's number one. And number two is, if she has a child, it might impact in terms of her ability to eat truma. So then, why don't we allow her to go through with the mincha and the procedure of sota over here, even though in terms of the bal, it's no nafkamina, but it's a nafkamina for other issues. The answer is, what is the purpose of the mesota? And we know that we're allowing mesota is one of those unusual practices where we allow the Shem Hashem to be nimchak. We erase the Shem Hashem. Why? Because the verse says, it's so important, Shalom Bayit, Ben Ish Le'ishto, that we allow the Shem to be Nimchak. That's only true when the outcome of this will be Shalom Bayit. But here, where the husband passed away, and the only outcome over here is, oh, you're going to be Matihir to the Boel, or to eat Shuma, we're not going to be Mochek the Shem in order to give her these side benefits. The only time we're Mochek the Shem, if there's a benefit that will end in Shalom Bayit. And so that's why we don't do it here, even though there may be reasons to do it. So that means that, again, in Vitisarev, Kareva Kometz, if the Kometz already ended up on Mizbeach, will you speak Lechol Shirayim? But the Kohanim didn't eat the leftovers, which go to the Kohanim after the Kometz was on Mizbeach. Ad Shemeitu, Ad Shemeitai, before he passes away, the husband or the wife passes away. Because Shalasafek Bat Mitchila. In the first place, the whole Mincha was brought ala Safek. Kipra, Sfeika, Valchala. It did its job. And now it goes. Now, kipra here is not like your classic sayings of kapara, where it's doing something for an avon, because that's not what it does over here. As Rashi said over here, it's kipra is lav kaparat avonu, v'lo haskarat avon, ela kapara haru'uya la. It is the stage in the process in which she goes through to drink the mesota. One of those way stations is the fact that she has to bring a mincha. So when she brought the mincha, she brought it with the right intent and for the right purpose. She was trying to move along through this process. Now that her husband died, or she passed away, that doesn't now change the status of the mincha as being a good mincha. The mincha did what it was supposed to do, which was allow her to get to the next stage of drinking the mesota. And it did it. So therefore, as long as it ended up on the mizbeach already, the shirayim can be eaten by the kohanim. Nimtzuei da zomamim, minchata chulin. If her edim are found to be zomamim, then the mincha is chulin, because here was a complete mistake. We find out that the edim that said that, and here it seems to be, as Rashi says, we're talking about the Eidei Stira. The Eidei Stira, which precipitated this whole problem, were lying, and they were edim zomamim, then minchata chulin. Then the whole process here was done by mistake. It's ekdesh ta'ot, and the mincha goes out to chulin. There are those also who say that the edim zomamim might apply to the Eidei Kinui as well. There, it's less likely to be true, because by kinui, the husband has to do the kinui. The husband is the one who warned her. If we have a deem to the kinoi, if the deem are lying, the husband knows they're lying because he knows whether he warned her or not. And so therefore he won't bring her up to the mikdash if he knows he didn't warn her. He knows that the mesota won't work in that case. But because of the husband's knowledge there, it's less likely it'll be meaningful because the husband knows whether he did the kinoi or not. There, the deem are acting just as evidence to back up the statement of the husband. As opposed by the stira, where they are the ones who are telling us that there was stira over here. You see from here that when you have a ta'ot, or where there's a problem, number one, we say that it's hekdesh ta'ot and it goes out to chulin, number one. Number two is we don't worry about any din derabanan to say, ah, we're worried about going from a kli sharet to chulin. Over here, the Mishnah, the Braita says, go ahead. The Tosefta says, go ahead and let it go to chulin. No isur derabanan placed here. So what Rav Papa suggested that this is a din derabanan, where's that din derabanan over here? Where it says, zomim kamart? Talking about Edim Zomim, Edim Zomimim Kala Idlohu. When it comes to Edim Zomim, that's something that is a public affair. First of all, because you're dealing with Edim. Number two is, the punishment for Edim Zomimim. There it says, V'chol Ha'am Yishmu V'yirao, that it also becomes something that's made public. So therefore, everybody will know the reason that this mincha is going to chulin is because the whole thing was on a false premise, and it'll be widely known. On the other hand, over here, by our case, the fact that something happened that we had Edim overseas, and that is what made the whole thing null and void. Not everybody knows about that. That's not information that's widely known. If that's the case, then you can't assume that people will know. The reason it's going from Kli Sharet to Chulin over here is because it was a mistake. Not everybody's aware of the mistake, and then you're going to have people come to the wrong conclusion. So that's the difference between what Rav Papa is saying in our case versus that Tosefta, which says that it goes out to Chulin and why there's no Gzeira de Rabbanan over there. Tanya Kavati de Rav Sheshet, Velav Mitame. We have a Braita that supports Rav Sheshet's contention, which is, if there are Edim overseas, the Mayim doesn't work, but not because of his reason. Right? His reason was that you don't have Edim, that's when it's the Mesuta work. You do have Edim, it doesn't work. Because he broke quoted that from the Pasuk and he tried to prove it from our Mishnah. But we have a Braita here, Torah. It's she is Torah, and not because she has Edim overseas. And in case of Torah, not that she has a zchut that protected her. Those about which rumors are circulating, that the women that weave by the light of the moon are talking about. I mean, it's the rumor mill, it's the yentas that are speaking about it. If it's already well known to the yentas, then it doesn't work. Here, the writer here is darshing the psukim that are found by the sota, because it says over there by the sota that if she's found to be innocent, vimlo nitma'aha isha, she was not defiled, utahorahi, and she is teora, v'nikta, v'nizra zara. She will be claimed innocent, and v'nizra zara, which is what we'll see later on in the Masechta, though she'll have a bracha. But here in the Pasuk, listen to this, it says, vimlo nitma'a isha, she was not defiled, utahorahi, and she is teora. That utahorahi is extraneous, you don't need to say that. Obviously, vimlo nitma'a, she is teora. So what this Braita is doing is darshaning utahorahi. Darshan is the word Torah, the U Tehorah, the Vav, and the He. So what it tells you is that when is she deemed to be Torah? Torah, v'lo yishesh la'idim b'mdinat hayam. The Mesota declare her Torah only in a case where there are no Edim overseas. If there are Edim overseas, she's not really Torah. The Mesota didn't work because there were Edim overseas, and now she's not really innocent. Tosfot points out over here what we said earlier, that when you learn from here, Torah, that Torah means that she's immediately Torah, and that they do not have to wait to see if evidence does show up, but immediately, once she drinks the Mesulta, then we assume she's innocent, unless we get evidence to the contrary, and she can return to her husband until the Edim do show up. U-Torah with the Vav, and the case where Zchut protects her, that's also the Mesulta, not a declaration that she is Torah. It simply didn't work because she had a Zchut. But he, it doesn't work also in the case, that it's only when the question revolves around her, there's a safek here, that's when the Mesota work. But if the rumor is so widely spread that everybody's talking about it already, then the Mesota don't work either because it's not really a safek. There's so much overwhelming evidence. You had kinui, stira, and rumors, all of that together make it that the Mesota will not work. What you see from here is that the Mesulta don't work when you have Edim overseas. But the source for that is from the word Torah and not from the Edim Ba that Rav Sheshet brought. Rabbi Shimon, Nehi the Vav lo Darish, according to Rabbi Shimon, who says that Zchut Eino Tolala, he doesn't darshan the Vav of Utorah. Vaika Yeshla Edim B'minat Adam, Rabbi Shimon says he's not darshaning the Vav because he believes that by Zchut, it would ruin the Mesulta. But maybe Rabbi Shimon also, by the case of Torah and Yesh La'idim Medina Tayam, also should say it doesn't work over there. Why does Rabbi Shimon not argue in that case? Gemara's answer is, Yesh La'idim Medina Tayam lo shchicha. That's a very uncommon case. And so Rabbi Shimon's not going to worry about problems with the Mesota because of that unusual circumstance where you have Edim overseas that know the information and not here. That's not the case. And Tosfot over here says, Huadin ba'le ba'la b'derach nami lo shchiach. Says also that case that we answered before is also not shchiach. So any case that is a far-fetched situation, there Rabbi Shimon says the Mesulta don't work, but it's not going to cast dispersions on the Mesulta because it's such an unusual case. We're not going to have to worry about this being the regular occurrence. And the cases where you have Zchut Tolala, which is a much more common case, there you have to worry about casting dispersions on the waters, women who are innocent being fit out to be guilty now because they say it's Zchut Tolala. There we do worry about that problem of Rabbi Shimon. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Zayin Amud Aleph.